103.2, Dublin City FM, part of the exciting world of modern IT, media, marketing and communication developments.
Good afternoon and welcome to Mediascope, the programme for and about the public relations, event management and journalism industries. I'm Ellen Gunning from the Irish Academy of Public Relations and you're very welcome to the programme. Later in the show I'm chatting with Shane Ennis and Gareth Hickey from NOAA, News Over Audio. First though I want to catch up with Tony D'Angelo, the President of the Public Relations Society of America, to find out how PR consultants in the States are defending the First Amendment rights and freedom of the press. Tony, thanks so much for taking my call.
You're most welcome, Ellen. It's a pleasure.
Pleasure to speak with you. Now, we first arranged our chat before anything happened in the Saudi consulate. So I want to begin by going back to maybe a month ago when you issued, as part of the Public Relations Society of America, as president, you issued a statement which began, and if you'll bear with me, I want to read the opening because it's a super opening, by quoting Thomas Jefferson. And it said, the basis of our governments being the opinion of the people, and the very first object should be to keep that right, and were it left to me to decide whether we should have a government without newspapers or newspapers without a government, I should not hesitate a moment to prefer the latter. It's a heck of an endorsement of media, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And Thomas Jefferson was somebody who had quite a few battles with the media of his day. Yet he still saw the essential value of the Fourth Estate. And I think we are, as Jefferson was, in a time where it's particularly important that we stand up for that. The truth serves all of us. And as public relations professionals, we depend on a free press and obviously must work in concert with the free press, treating them as professionals with a job to do. And their job is to provide a transparent view of the facts so that people can make up their own minds. And that's essential for the functioning of a democracy or a society.
And when you first issued this statement, Tony, was it driven by the whole growth of fake news, by the change in news media or news reporting in the States, or the bypassing of traditional news in the States?
I believe it was driven by I think, as you've noted, charges that the press is somehow the enemy as opposed to the advocate of the people. And that may sound as a political statement, and I'd like to underscore with some force that that is not my intent. That is not the Public Relations Society of America's intent. It is rather to say that the press has a job to do and that we as public relations professionals must stand for that. And that, to me, goes above the notion of a political party. We co-signed a statement with more than a dozen other professional communications associations in mid-August to stand for the value of a free press. And that was greeted with a lot of affirmation. And then with the Khashoggi incident, much more recently, we co-signed a statement with more than 40 other associations, mostly from the press sector, actually, calling for an open investigation into his disappearance and death. And we see that as part of our responsibility as ethical communication practitioners. There are charges of fake news and bias in reporting. And to my way of thinking, and I think based on the leadership of PRSA, the direction we'd like to go in terms of advocacy, is that it is certainly okay to vigorously debate, to argue, to have dissension against any point of view, perfectly acceptable, and that helps good ideas rise to the top. What is not acceptable is violent reprisals. This gets into a very dangerous area, and that's what we're speaking out against.
One of the things that particularly struck me, and you're right, the difference between your first statement and your second, your first statement was supported by people like the International Association of Business Communicators, the PR Council, the Canadian Public Relations Society. So it was very much PR people saying, we support the press. And the second was the press saying, thank you for supporting us, effectively. But one of the things that I think others would find surprising is that as PR practitioners, you're saying that your advice to your clients always, every time, is that no matter what the question is, truth is the answer. Truth, truth, always truth. And I think that would surprise quite a lot of people who would assume that you wouldn't actually support a press that would dig in and try to find out what the real story is. Their perception of public relations maybe is a bit skewed.
Yes, it's very skewed, I believe. And I think that it's the job of ethical public relations professionals to define to the larger world what public relations, professional public relations, truly is. It is not spin. That's a term that I detest and that I refrain from using. And if you ask an experienced public relations professional what works when it comes to defining a position or advocating for a position, the answer is almost without exception, not what one says, but what one does. The Arthur Page Society says basically that 90% of what people believe is what you do, not what you say, especially in these times where I think we have to come to grips with the idea that we are all in some measure skeptical of each other. We worry about who is presenting, whether it's fake news or a story that is mostly spin and not much substance. I think for us to really do our jobs effectively, we have to advocate for the truth because that's what works.
The interesting thing that strikes me is that I think most journalists who link with public relations people would say that that is exactly what you do, that you provide as much truth and as much very good ethical guidance as possible. And yet I'm very conscious that while the PRSA is standing up for a free press, we don't actually see an awful lot of interaction coming the other way with journalists saying less of the spin doctoring, they're the bad guys who fill us full of rubbish, and more of, yes, these are good ethical practitioners who really are the opposite side of the coin from ourselves.
Yes, I'm not sure that I've heard from the journalism sector a defense of public relations. I think that's probably an accurate observation. But I do believe that journalists respect and work effectively with those public relations professionals who have earned their trust. They see the role. I think all of us who've been in this profession have been thanked by journalists for giving them access to sources, to providing background information that helps them do their jobs. And if you would like to define it as the two sides, if you will, journalism and public relations, I think they function best together when we each treat the other as a professional with a job to do. And it's our job as public relations professionals to advocate. We do take a side, and we're unapologetic about that. But hopefully, and when we're practicing at the highest levels, we are advocating to the corporations or the clients or the not-for-profit organization or the government that we represent. We are advocating for them to do the right thing, to operate in the public interest. And we have all found, as PR professionals, that it is every bit as much of our responsibility not to only project the message out, but to take a message in to the organization. This idea of bringing the outside in, other voices, so that there is a listening function on behalf of the organizations that we serve, also helps those organizations function more effectively and more responsibly. And if that system works, I think that a community, a government, even a society can function more effectively. And it goes to effective dialogue, I think. That's something that we promote. And it's also, and this is a very difficult principle to employ, the idea that you have to be open to mutual adjustment. In other words, if I'm representing a corporation and we're having a conflict with a given group, let's say it's an activist group or an environmental group that has a problem with something that the corporation is doing, if we engage in dialogue with them and we're actually open to their suggestions, if we can get to a place where we become the co-authors of a solution instead of two sides that are diametrically opposed, I have seen cases where a third solution, not my position or your position, but a third solution can emerge that's actually better than the two original parties had planned for.
I think that's exactly what you were talking about when you said bringing the outside in. It's an ability of somebody who is on your side or on the side of the client saying, okay, I get where you're coming from, but I also get where they're coming from. Let's open up a dialogue and see what lies in the middle. Tell me something about, let me just bring you back to Saudi Arabia and the disappearance and murder of Khashoggi. What do you think, is there more that can be done? I know that the public relations practitioners, the journalists have said we are outraged, this is appalling, this should never have happened. How do we actually stand up for a free press? Is there more that we can do?
I think we have to be ever vigilant in standing up for a free press. And we also, in an age where not only are conflicts increasingly polarized, that's, I think, a very serious challenge. And I think that another serious challenge is that our attention spans for all sorts of news and public issues, public information, is getting increasingly shorter. We can't waver in our focus. We have to keep focused on such issues as Khashoggi's death to demand a full accounting and not to be satisfied with with a story that we all know has changed more than once. And
will change again before we're done, unfortunately. I think, Tony, my attention span is being caught by somebody who's telling me we are absolutely out of time. It has been a pleasure talking to you. Tony D'Angelo, President of Public Relations Society of America, thank you for that chat.
Thank you, Ellen. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Mediascope Show with Ellen Gunning on 103.2 Dublin City FM.
Welcome back. I'm joined in studio by Shane Ennis and Gareth Hickey, co-founders of NOAA News Over Audio. You're both very welcome in the studio.
Thanks, Al.
Hi, Al.
Don't know who to begin with. Gareth, tell me, where did the idea for News Over Audio come from?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's definitely probably the first question that's asked to us most times. So, what are they back to probably late 2014, early 2015? Myself and Shane, we were fairly fresh in the working world, probably 2 or 3 years, or 2 to 4 years between the two of us. We kind of got to that stage in our lives as well that we wanted to, I suppose, be a bit more inquisitive about what was going on in the world, whether that was, I suppose, Siri was a big thing at the time, but it was other things. I mean, there's just a number of kind of topics that we just wanted to kind of get a bit more to grips with. Shane had introduced me to the idea of audiobooks. I knew Shane through a mutual friend, a cousin of his I went to college with, and yeah, he introduced me to audiobooks. I started listening. I really loved them. Found it very convenient in the car, good spend of time. And we actually asked ourselves, very much from a consumer point of view, is there a similar offering in the journalism market? And it turned out there wasn't.
So Shane, why not do like podcasts about current affairs, issues of serious interest, so that you can tune into something like Syria and get the update? Why go for, effectively what you're doing is you're taking the news from newspapers.
Correct.
And creating it in audio so that I can hear what I would have been reading.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's our process. We take written articles that range from, you know, 500 to maybe 2,000 words in length, depending on what the story is about. And we looked at the journalism, you know, sphere as something that's so rich, and there's so much depth in terms of opinion, analysis, real good insights, and just breaking news stories around the world come from often from the written press. So we were looking at this, you know, really, really diverse and really deep level of content that was out there, and there was no audio version of it. And of course the beauty of audio is in its convenience. You know, you've got to sit down and physically read a paper either in the print or the digital format right now. And we sort of, you know, we knew that podcasts were doing their thing, and they're slightly longer form and often more colourful and conversational. we saw
and more like a feature article.
Absolutely,
kind of style.
Yeah. Sort of like a Financial Times big read, for example. That sort of length and even longer. What we started to do in the early days of testing is we got some early narrations done. We realized that, you know, a 750 word article, which is probably our average word count that we would convert to audio, was coming out at around 5 to 7 minutes in length, and that's a nice bite sized piece.
That's a good size.
It's
yeah.
perfect. Yeah, and it means that, you know, We always had the end user in mind. So when you consider somebody driving to work, the average commute time in this country is 30 minutes, you know, from home to the office. There's potentially six, you know, maybe 4 to 6 different pieces of information or topics that you could pick up on our app, because we've narrated it, you know, and put it in your car if you're walking. Or
it's curious. I'm going to bounce back to Gareth if I can. Sure. It's curious that you mentioned driving into work in the morning, because I would associate driving into work or traveling into work in the morning with live radio
correct.
And current affairs, and maybe picking up on the newspaper, generally in my case when I get into the office, mm-hmm. But doing it before or after. Do you see it as competing with radio or enhancing radio, or how does it fit in a radio kind of landscape?
Very much see it sitting alongside radio and other forms of audio as well. And so like, I mean, we continue to be big consumers of talk show radio and audiobooks and podcasts as well. But I mean, the thing with audio consumption is, because you can do it while you are doing other activities, essentially, whether that's exercising, cooking is a big use case for us as well, driving, walking, whatever it may be, you can fit quite a bit more in than let's just say visual media, so videos or social media, Instagram, things like that. So because there's just such a wider window of consumption or of potential consumption, you can mix audio into many forms of audio into different use cases. And Noah, I suppose what we do, audio journalism, it really does allow people to come up to speed quite quick and quite actively on many different topics. So podcasts, while there are many different podcasts out there, it's a very fragmented market. It's hard to find the exact one that you want at one point in time. Radio again, being linear, it's a scheduled program. You don't have that, you know, I suppose the value of on demand. The market across media, whether it's video or audio, is really moving towards that on demand medium, and we allow people to choose the topic that they want when they want it.
Actually, I was just going to ask you that. I might bounce back to you, Shane. So if I'm fussy about what I read, which I am, how do I tell you which newspapers I would like my audio from, or how does the app actually work?
Yeah, so when you open up the app right now, you're presented with a number of routes to content. So you can pick an individual publisher. So maybe you want to listen to the FT or Bloomberg or the Irish Times, and you can see what's in each of those sections. You can see their latest content. You can see it by category, for example. We've also got content sectioned off by journalists. So we have some very strong writers write for these world-class publications.
Yeah.
Perhaps a name that's well known to all of us in the Irish space is Fintan O'Toole. So there's a Fintan O'Toole playlist. So if you want to listen to Fintan's most recent pieces, you can do that. And more recently, we've started collecting or putting together these collections of articles that we're calling playlists, which are, they're not categories. So it's not a high level category like business or finance or sport or technology. It's something a little bit, you know, below that. So in the technology space, it could be a playlist about artificial intelligence or electric cars. In the finance sphere, it could be about private equity, markets, trading, for example.
The kind of stuff that if you were reading the paper would catch your eye and you think, oh, I'm curious about that, but you never actually would have made a list of, I want to read an article
absolutely. And you know, this is the great enabler from a user perspective in terms of content discovery, that you can see these words and these phrases and say, yes, that's a collection of articles that is very relevant to me. And when you click into these lists, you're presented with a list of contents, and you just tap on one and press play from there. So
I presume the idea is eventually that you will get to, I hate this predictive, you know, you liked this, so we assume you will also like that.
Yeah.
But I presume that's where you're going with this app as well.
There's elements of it, all right. Yeah, look, I mean, Shane's definitely the man to speak more on that. But it is important to I suppose, show people a selection of the topics that they want. Like, I mean, so it's one thing to say, okay, look, I suppose the issue that you can fall into, especially with social media and so forth, are these kind of content bubbles, and we've kind of heard it's almost cliche now, whereby if you kind of have, let's say, a left-leaning view on, let's say, social housing, you're going to see more content from those publications. But what we say is, look, you're interested in housing. We want to serve you content within that playlist that has, I suppose, opinions and analysis from both sides of the spectrum, so that you're actually just getting a fuller picture of that particular topic. So we really break it down on a topic basis, as opposed to just saying, okay, look, you're interested in that particular
publication.
As opposed
to the content of the topic or whatever.
Correct.
And what about the age profile then that you're aiming for? Because the age profile of, like, newspapers sales are declining, and when you look at people who read newspapers, unless they're free newspapers, they're mostly older people who are addicted to their Irish Times or Irish Independent or whatever every day.
Sure.
So from your point of view, how do you bring, because I presume the market is a younger audience because they're the on-demand people, how do you bring them to want to find out what's in a newspaper across audio?
People are naturally curious, Ellen. Like, I mean, people, if there's an extremely easy way for people to get up to speed on a particular topic, I mean, they would want that. Like, I mean, people don't want to not know about Brexit, but do they really want to invest the time to know? That's the question. I suppose that's the problem that we're looking to solve. It's difficult to understand these topics. And by the way, it's not all fruit and veg. I mean, we do lighter topics as well. We have a playlist kind of inspirational stories, and it's a mix of obituaries and it could be kind of a profile of Tiger Woods going up to his PGA win and up to the Ryder Cup as well. Like, so there's a variety of kind of general interest and kind of more the heavy hitting stuff. But really, what we want to do is just make it easier for people to understand those topics. And because people, I suppose, humans naturally have a curiosity for information. Look, it kind of serves that purpose.
It often fascinates me that people talk about, you know, we're overloaded with all of the information, you think, I know, but every time somebody else says, and here's another way that you can access information, you go, well, that could be interesting. I'd like to keep up with that as well. We're kind of information junkies, I suppose, in a certain way.
True.
From the newspaper's point of view, did you start by approaching them and saying, we have this idea, we want you on board, or how did it work?
Yeah, exactly. So when we originally started talking about this, just about 3 years ago at this stage, we began, you know, talking to the publishers in the Irish market, because obviously they were local, they were very approachable. And we started to flesh it out, and I remember the first couple of conversations, I think they had to listen twice or look at us twice to actually fully get, you know, what we were proposing here, because this hasn't been done before, you know.
Well, so we listen when they can read. Kind of.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so actually, that's your immediate instinct. It's like, why would you do that?
Why, yeah, yeah. For sure. What happened then was, I think, you know, the success of single platform audio platforms in terms of the music industry, so Spotify, Apple Music, etc., audiobooks, Audible doing some fantastic stuff in that space, of taking written word books and you know, doing exactly what we do as well, is converting them into human narration, and also the podcast space as well. So I think the market certainly started to solidify itself in terms of these single platforms, one app where a user can get all of the audio content that they would want. In some cases it's completely free, like many podcasts, and in some cases you pay $9.99 for music, for example, on Spotify. So the conversations became a little bit easier then, I think, when publishers saw that, you know, the single platform was the way forward, that buying individual songs on iTunes was not going to be a sustainable model, but paying a monthly rate for access to content really was, and coupled with, you know, them just listening to what we had narrated, those early narration tests and sort of the verification that you could take written word off a page and listen back to it, you know, as a short story, and really verified. And, you know, from there we work with the Irish Times on a beta trial basis in August of 2016, and we launched shortly after that. So
and what about the newspapers who drive people behind a paywall?
Yes, yeah,
so they say, you know, here is your sampler or whatever. Now pay money to access more.
It's great to bring it up, because that's really, it's with those publishers that our conversations are advancing the fastest. Like, I mean, one big trend in the publishing industry, especially within kind of quality journalism, let's just say, is a shift away from that kind of freemium advertisement-based model towards a paid-for model. And like, I mean, people often point to The Guardian as kind of one quality publisher that's gone against the grain there, but they're not really. I mean, they're looking for people to pay contributions. They're looking for money out of the consumer's
pocket. They ask you every time you read, yeah.
They do, yeah. Like, I mean, how audio journalism fits into that actually is we actually are able to boost engagement with the publisher's end product, essentially, with journalism. So the average dwell time on an article online is less than 45 seconds. So people are kind of pressing on and pressing off. They're not really reading after the headline or the first paragraph. And we're all culprits for it. Me and Shane were big bookmarkers of articles. We used an app called Pocket. It was a US app, and you could save an article, come back in the weekend. But sure, the list of articles that you save tends to grow faster.
I am so relieved that there are others in the world
do. There's many millions of others, and so really, we with audio journalism and the stats that we're seeing now, and we've seen since the start, is that when people click on an article to listen, they tend to listen right the way through.
Well, it's 5 to 7 minutes. It kind of grabs them.
Yeah, exactly.
Shane Ennis and Gareth Hickey, thank you both so much for joining me afternoon. I really enjoyed that insight.
Thanks so much, Ellen.
Cheers.
Well now, that's all I have for you for this week. If you've information you'd like to share with listeners, or you've a good story to tell, then please email me on mediascope@dublincityfm.ie. And don't forget, you can hear podcasts of this and previous Mediascope programmes on www.irishacademy.ie. I'm Ellen Gunning. Sound this week was by Fergal Daly. My thanks to Shane Ennis, Gareth Hickey and Tony D'Angelo. And thanks to you for being with me today. I look forward to the pleasure of your company at the same time next week. So until then, goodbye.